Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio.
Yeah, I probably don't say it enough, but we are actually in the panhandle of Florida. So that's where Milton is. I never included it our beginning theme. Maybe I should do that someday. I'll just let you know periodically. If you don't know, you can always ask. Anyway, 215-383-3832 is the phone number to call in. Let me just double check that. I hesitated. Yeah, that's right. 215-383-3832. Pretty easy number to remember. Friday we kind of catch up. Friday we kind of, figure out what's going on and summarize the week. But today's a little different because I have of a lawsuit that was sent to me by one of our friends at the show, Tina, who is just absolutely wonderful. I keep saying this, but it is true. This show would not be what it is. It would not succeed without the researchers around the country that are looking for stuff, the friends of mine that supply me with just amazing information and stories and all the things that go into putting this together, the guests, the reporters, the reporters who bring on guests, like Jonathan brought on a guest yesterday. And so it's really a growing thing. And for me, because I don't know, I like to have people be as creative and, as interesting as they can and to provide, opportunities, not limitations, because all my life, it's always been limitations. It's always been what I couldn't do or, what idea wasn't going to work. And you get to the point where you sort of say that the only way you're going to succeed is to do it all yourself. And that's pretty much why I'm here, doing this myself with everybody else. So, excuse me. Yes, I'm by myself, behind the microphone here, but beyond this microphone is an entire network of fascinating, dedicated, enthusiastic people that love this country and want it back. And we're going to get it back too. It's just a question of how and when. And one of the groups I've actually had a little trouble reaching, because I'm sure they get a lot of stuff and a lot of, harassment and everything else, is America's Frontline Doctors. Okay, this is Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Stella Emanuel, various other people. I'm not sure. I don't know if Dr. Peter McCullough is involved with that. But I just watched his interview again yesterday. It's an hour and a half, and it's on Rumble. You're not going to find it on YouTube. And he keeps getting canceled from YouTube. But if you go to Rumble, that's R-U-M-B-L-E, Rumble, and you look for the Peter McCullough interview, it's a full interview. It's about an hour and a half. And it's well worth your time to listen to it because there's a series of questions asked. And you can do it in bits and pieces, but just go through that and you'll find everything that's wrong with COVID and everything's wrong with the vaccines. And as I have to couch my language because I want to avoid censorship so I can still be effective, on social media. Basically, COVID's nothing compared to what the government has done. So, and I made a post. Yeah, I may actually bring that up because it's kind of an interesting post. It's getting a pretty strong reaction. So let's go back to my Facebook page. Oh, I just found a story on another site too. Eric Clapton says he won't play venues that enforce vaccine mandates. Well, good for him. See, there's somebody who's taken the initiative, who's standing up, who's worldly popular. I mean, worldwide. Recognized as one of the great guitar players of all time. It's just nice to see him doing that. And other performers need to do that. Other performers need to say, I'm not going to perform if you have mask mandates and vaccine mandates. That's criminal. Those are what's causing the problem. Remember, if masks and lockdowns worked, COVID would have stopped. The fact that it keeps increasing, as they say, tells you that that they don't work. If something doesn't work, doing more of it is not going to work even more so. Surprise, surprise. So I wrote this thing yesterday. I'm going to scroll down here and find it. I get the exact words. I said, the real virus is fear. There is no cure. You can buy temporary comfort with compliance. Then come the variants. It's almost like a haiku. So to explain that, fear is the virus, because the actual virus, the original COVID-19 virus, died out, I don't know, 6 months to a year ago. It's gone. All you have now are the mutations. And the mutations, as I learned from the group American physicians and surgeons, that it's actually the vaccines that are causing the variants, because the vaccines are mutating. And in healthy people with a healthy immune system, the mutations are so close to the original, it doesn't matter. You know, your immune system kills them. But if you're vaccinated for one, the virus is smart enough to switch to another. You know, and so the vaccinated people are in real trouble. In fact, I should probably, you know, let me drag that out before I say enough that people are going, Greg, what are you talking about? I'm here. Yeah, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, July 8th, 2021, the article COVID-19, what about the Delta variant? And it says very, very clearly here, vaccinated people probably have antibodies that work against variants, but we are seeing antibody-dependent enhancement. So your antibodies are actually enhancing the disease, you know, as occurred in animals vaccinated against SARS-CoV-1 a decade ago, okay? It says because of this, the vaccine was not used in humans. This table, and you can go just look up the article. It's full of, you know, those triangle signs with question marks, okay? This table shows, and you can look up the table. I can't post it. I'll get censored because this is the truth. Remember, censorship means covering the truth. That's what it means these days, right? This table shows that vaccinated people with Delta variant disease were 6 times more likely to die. Let me do that again, because you're not going to hear this on the news, all right? Because they're pushing vaccines as, you know, if you don't get the vaccine, you're going to die. And these people are saying you're 6 times more likely to die with the vaccine. Well, think about that. Gee, I didn't hear that on the news. And this comes from the British organization, Public Health England, which is pretty much equivalent, I guess, to our CDC. It says this table shows that vaccinated people with Delta variant disease were 6 times more likely to die than unvaccinated people, according to Public Health England. Next graph says this. I did this earlier in the week because it's so dramatic. It's amazing, and it's from these are experts. Okay, says, well, it's not by experts. Yeah, it is. It's the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. This is doctors talking to doctors. Okay, and then the next one says the bar graph shows the number of deaths in red and cases in black by vaccination status. Here, the death rate. Let me slow down again. Is 8.5 times higher in those with 2 doses of vaccine than in those who have received none. 8.5 times higher in those with 2 doses of vaccine than in those who have received none. So is the vaccine more dangerous than COVID? Yeah, by multiples, huge multiples. Okay. So fear. So what they've done, COVID is just a marketing tool. Okay. That's all it is. It's a marketing tool. The whole thing is to sell vaccines. In fact, either McCullough stole my line or I stole his line. I think I came up with it first because I've been saying this for months, and his interview just came out in May. But I've been saying for months that all roads lead to vaccines, you know, because that's everything. You know, cures are not allowed. Treatment's not allowed. In fact, you can't even discuss them. Treatments are banned. Cures are banned, you know. And why would they do that? You know, the byproduct is a whole bunch of people are dying. But the reason is so they can push everybody towards vaccines. Everything is to push you towards vaccines. And how do they push you towards vaccines? With fear. So fear is the virus that's spreading, okay? There is no cure for this fear because everybody has this fear until you get over it. I never had it because I knew COVID could be cured back in March 2nd of 2020 when I found the study by Dr. Raoult, and I found a bunch of other studies, and I found Dr. Zelenko's, you know, protocols with zinc, hydroxychloroquine, and zithromycin. So I never worried about COVID, never. You know, the minute the governor locked down Florida, the first thing I did was go for a long drive singing out the window with the windows open and no mask. Surprise, surprise. Why? Because I knew it had a cure. And anybody that listened to the show back in March 2nd, you know, over a year ago, knew that there was a cure also. And you knew there's nothing to fear from this. What you had to fear is the government, because the government suppressed the cure. The government killed people by suppressing the cure. Okay, and now they're killing people with what they think is the cure, vaccines, but they really don't care if it's the cure or not. I mean, this disease is not designed to be cured. It's designed to sell vaccines. Okay, and who makes money? Well, Big Pharma makes money. You know, Dr. Fascist, and who we call Dr. Fauci, and all of the health bureaucrats, they make money off royalties and patents. You know, the investors like Zuckerberg and Dorsey, they make money because they have billions invested in Big Pharma, and they've made billions more on their billions. Everybody's making money at this. The media makes money because they get stories on it, and they sell advertising, so they make money. So everybody's making money off death, okay? That's what's going on here. They're making money off death, and they're using fear as the virus, and the virus will spread. And then I wrote, you can buy temporary comfort with compliance. Okay, how do you comply? You comply with a mask mandate. You comply with a lockdown. You know, and then they say, okay, well, now you're fine. So you've complied with that. So now you get your life back. Well, no, then the vaccines are going to come out. We're going to make those mandatory. So you take the vaccine. Well, not mandatory. Well, they are. Well, anyway, let me put it this way. The vaccines come out and you're highly encouraged to take them. So people run out and take them. And then the government says, now you can have your life back. And then after a while, they say, well, you know, man, now that we rethink this, you better put the masks back on. And, you know, we're thinking of lockdowns again because there's a Delta variant, you know, and then you might need a booster shot. And so you buy back your life, what you think from the government, you know, with some compliance. And then they say, well, wait a minute, you know, we need more. There's going to be a gamma, you know, I mean, how many letters are in the Greek alphabet? Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, pi, rho, sigma, tau, phi, chi, psi, omega. Whew, I had to learn that in college for a fraternity. All right, anyway, that's a lot of variants. Okay, if that's where you're going, then you're going to have trouble because, you know, as Franklin said, you can't buy liberty with safety. And so if you're going to comply for what you think is safety, then you're going to lose that much more liberty. And every time you comply with the government's, you know, version of safety, you're going to lose more liberty. So you got to start resisting. And the way you resist is you don't get the vaccine. Okay, so let me play my this would be a good time to play my PSA, and then I'll get into the lawsuit. I'll pick up the lawsuit afterwards, too. You can read the lawsuit. I posted it on Facebook. I posted it in the Action Radio group, and I'll tell you exactly how to find it online if you're just listening to the podcast. But you need to get this lawsuit because these are the folks that are fighting back, that are resisting, that are talking about real liberty, liberty of your health, body integrity, a body that does not have a messenger RNA genetic modification, okay? You will never have your body integrity if you get the vaccine. You will forever be genetically modified. And that's just the way you can get over COVID. Okay. But as I say in the PSA, you can't get over the COVID vaccine. In fact, we had a discussion. I'm going to follow this up. I've already texted a few doctors, well-known doctors, and asked them this question, that should we be separating the blood supply? Okay. In other words, do you have the right to vaccine-free blood, messenger RNA-free blood, blood that doesn't have spike proteins that will break off and get into your bloodstream and form more spike proteins and more blood clots and make you just as sick as the person that donated the blood who's had the vaccine. I want, if I have to go into surgery, unfortunately, I've already had my heart surgery, so I'm good for a whole long time, knock on wood, all right? And but for those folks that are contemplating surgery, you might want to donate your own blood. Okay, this is what the Jehovah's Witnesses do. They donate their own blood, and they keep their own blood. So if you're going to give me blood, I want mine. You know, and that may be what it's coming to. And we took AIDS out of the blood supply for hospitals. I think we need to separate vaccinated spike protein blood clotting blood. Well, that's an interesting question too. Is blood from vaccinated people going to clot on its own in the donated blood sample? Won't that be interesting? So all these things in this brave new world we're in are coming out because they rush this into production to make money. You know, greed knows no standard. Greed has no conscience. You know, greed contrary to, Michael Douglas, Gordon Gekko in The Firm, is not good in this case because greed leads to obsession. Obsession leads to genocide, and genocide leads to what we've got. Yep, there you go. All right, let me play this, and I'll be, where is it? Right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
And now we have a lawsuit in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Alabama. Oh, that's close by. I got to check this out. America's Frontline Doctors et al. Plaintiffs versus Javier Becerra, Secretary of U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Civil action number 2:21-CV-00702-CLM. Filed 2021, July 19th, p.m. at 1:01, U.S. District Court, North ND, I guess it's the district of Alabama. Yep, Northern District. So there you go. You want to look up this case? United States District Court for Northern District of Alabama, America's Frontline Doctors versus Javier Becerra, Secretary of Health and Human Services. Plaintiffs motion for a preliminary injunction. Here's the table of contents just to get an idea. And I won't get through a lot of this, but I want to get through as much as I can in this half hour, and then I'll pick it up in the last half hour just to keep. This is my only source for today. I don't need anything else. This is so amazing the way it's all put together. Summary of facts: the unlawful vaccine emergency use authorization. Two, there is no emergency. There is, in fact, no serious or life-threatening disease or condition. The vaccines do not diagnose, treat, or prevent SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. The known and potential risks of the vaccines outweigh their known potential benefits. You know, then section five, I'm skipping numbers here. There are adequate, approved, and available alternatives to the vaccines. Six, health professionals and vaccine candidates are not adequately informed. Seven, monitoring and reporting of adverse events. And then they get, you know, category B, the under 18, C, those previously infected with SARS, D, whistleblower testimony, which I went over yesterday, 45,000 deaths caused by a vaccine, and it goes to other sections, law and analysis. And I'll probably get together with Jonathan, and we'll see if we can pick this up maybe Thursday, because this might be fascinating. So I'm just going to go through it, just to let you know, I'll give you the intro, and you make the decision. You know, if you support this lawsuit, I'm not sure, you know, how you support it other than to share it. But let people know that there is a lawsuit to stop vaccines cold in their tracks because they are illegal and dangerous. Illegal because they're not using the government authority, the lawful authority properly, and dangerous because they're killing people, upwards of 45,000. Okay? Again, you're not going to hear this anywhere else. Well, you're going to hear this American Frontline Docs and certain sources and certain videos and things like that. But this is a place you can call in. You got a question, call me, 215-383-3832. Back to the lawsuit. Introduction. Plaintiffs move under Rule 65, Fed RCIVP, for a preliminary injunction against defendants, that'd be the government, enjoining them from continuing to authorize the emergency use of the so-called Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, Moderna COVID-19 vaccine, Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine, collectively the vaccines, pursuant to their respective emergency use authorizations, and from granting full Food and Drug Administration, that's the FDA, approval of the vaccines. Four, the under 18 category, for those regardless of age who have been infected with the SARS-CoV-2 prior to vaccination and until such time as the defendants have complied with their obligation to create and maintain the requisite, quote, conditions of authorization under Section 546 of the Food, Drugs, and Cosmetic Act 21, that's Title 21, USC, Section 360BB-3E, thereby enabling vaccine candidates to give truly voluntary informed consent. Okay, let me translate that into English real quickly. Okay, a preliminary injunction, I'm not sure how the preliminary works, but an injunction means you got to stop what you're doing. All right, so when a judge, you know, puts an injunction on a law, that law does not go into effect. All right, I think that's wrong in a lot of cases, but we'll talk about that later. But what these folks are doing in court is to stop the government from this emergency use authorization, which I believe is a total fraud, and it's killing people. Like I said, they're looking at 45,000 dead already from the vaccine, you know, from a whistleblower's testimony under penalty of perjury. Okay, that's a whole lot stronger than Dr. Fascist getting up there and making stuff up, you know, in front of the camera. And he's not even a virologist. He, you know, he's head of the Allergy and Infectious Disease Center at the National Institute for Health. He has no special training in allergies. He has no special training in viruses. He's just got a basic MD. And this is the guy that's making policy for the world, basically. All right. That's why we call him Dr. Fascist. He doesn't care. He makes money off royalties and off patents, and his sole preoccupation is his own personal greed, and he will lie through his teeth to make money off the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans. Thus the title, Genocidal Psychopathic Vaccine Drug Pusher. That's who he is, Dr. Fascist. Back to the lawsuit. So they want to stop it for those under 18 because they don't need it. People under 18 have a 99.999% chance of being just fine with COVID. You know, I'm sure 90% of them don't even know they have it, you know, unless they get herd immunity. So all these people that don't, you know, that are just, you know, ripping right through it, that's why would you vaccinate those people? And those regardless of age who have been infected already and gotten over it, you've got immunity, a hell of a lot better than any vaccine's going to give you. Chemical immunity is nowhere near as good as natural immunity. Any basic med student knows that. And the third one, until such time as the defendants have complied with the law. Summary of facts, section 2. Plaintiff referenced to and incorporate herein facts contained in their complaint filed on June 10th, 2021. The unlawful vaccine emergency use authorization. Okay, this is critical. Section 1. There is no emergency. On February 4th, 2020, the Department of Health and Human Services secretary declared pursuant to 360BBB, blah, 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 that SARS-CoV-2 created a public health emergency. They did that so they could sell vaccines, okay? Let's be honest here. That's the document. This initial emergency declaration has been renewed repeatedly and remains in force today. The emergency declaration is the necessary legal predicate for the issuance of the vaccine emergency use authorizations. That's when they don't have full Food and Drug Administration approval. It's under an emergency. You have to declare an emergency to get an emergency authorization. That's why this is so important. This is why the connection. That's why they have to maintain the emergency declaration in order to give you the vaccine without testing it. Okay. You see how it works? All right. Emergency declaration is a necessary legal predicate for the issuance of the vaccine EUA, which is emergency use authorization, which have allowed the mass use of the vaccines by the American public even before the completion of the standard regimen of clinical trials and FDA approval. In other words, they declare an emergency, they declare an emergency use, they give you the vaccine, and they have this emergency for the sole purpose of giving it to you before clinical trials and FDA approval. Still want the vaccine? I hope not. Back to the document. The emergency declaration and its multiple renewals are illegal since, in fact, there is no underlying emergency. Assuming the accuracy of the defendant's COVID-19 death data, SARS-CoV-2 has an overall survivability rate of 99.8% globally, which increases to 99.97% for persons under the age of 70. On a par with the seasonal flu. That's what we call the flu bug, okay? That's why we've called the flu bug since the beginning. Right? However, back to the document, defendant's data is deliberately inflated. On March 24th, 2020, okay, that would be during the 15 days to slow the spread, okay, back Trump time, the Department of Health and Human Services changed the rules, okay, changed the rules applicable to coroners and others responsible for producing death certificates, making the cause of death determination exclusively for COVID-19. The rule change states, and this quote's here, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents, that's dead people, where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. In fact, the Department of Health and Human Services statistics show that 95% of deaths classified as COVID-19 deaths involve an average of four additional comorbidities, in other words, causes of death. All right. The CDC knew, quote, the rules for coding and selecting of the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19 being the underlying cause more often than not. So in other words, that's the difference. This is when we talk about, you know, dying from COVID and dying with COVID. Okay. If you died with COVID and four other things, did COVID kill you? It might have contributed. But so would heart disease, cancer, you know, obesity, diabetes, and then the other comorbidities that are common to people. Okay, age. You know, age is a comorbidity. I mean, if you're, like 96, you know, you're and still here, congratulations to you. But, you know, you're on the shorter side of life. And so think about that, all right? So the CDC knew it. So what did they do? March 24th, 2020, they changed the rules. They changed the rules for death certificates, okay, to make it look worse than it really was. This is why the government is your biggest enemy, not COVID. COVID's a little virus that died out last year, you know, like July 4th, you know, COVID Independence Day 2020, over a year ago. You know, in fact, the vaccines now are for that original virus. This is what I learned from Dr. Peter McCullough yesterday. The vaccines today, you know, are based on that original virus, which died out. So you're getting a vaccine for a virus that no longer exists, and you're risking your health in the process. This is why these doctors want to stop this, okay? Now, I'd rather do certain sections in detail than try and cover the whole thing because you can read this. You should read this. It's a fascinating lawsuit. It's only 60 pages. You can do it. All right. Back to the intro. Similarly, the actual number of COVID-19 cases, that's when they stop talking deaths. Remember when they start talking cases? All right. Why? Because cases are bigger. Excuse me. Cases is far lower than the reported number. The actual number of COVID cases is far lower than the reported number. Health and Human Services authorized the emergency use of the polymerase chain reaction, that's PCR test, as a diagnostic tool for COVID-19 with disastrous consequences. Okay, PCR is the test you get for COVID-19. The inventor of PCR said it's not for testing viruses. Okay, polymerase chain reaction, that's what it tests for. Polymerase, I think that's plastic. I'm not sure what polymers are. But anyway, ask a doctor. We'll get some. I've asked some doctors to, you know, drum in and you know, find out what's going on here. All right. The PCR tests are themselves experimental products authorized by the FDA under separate EUAs. So you've got a declared emergency for a disease that's nowhere near an emergency. You've got an experimental authorization for vaccines for a previous virus and that aren't helping, that aren't as good as your own immunity. And the tests to see if they have the cases is, in fact, itself experimental. All right. Are you with me on all this? The fraud on top of fraud, on top of fraud, on top of lies, on top of lies, on top of lies never stops. You can stop it by not taking their messenger RNA genetic modification. Don't get in the system. Resist. Your life may depend on it, very possibly. Back to the article, back to the court documents. The PCR tests are themselves experimental products authorized by the FDA under separate EUAs, emergency use authorizations. PCR test manufacturers use disclaimers like this in their product manuals. Quote, the FDA has not determined that the test is safe or effective for the detection of SARS-CoV-2. Do you get that? In the instructions, they tell you that the test for COVID, you know, it's not safe or effective as a test for COVID. I mean, I hate to laugh at this, but it's so tragic. It's funny. Okay, back to the court document. Manufacturer inserts, I'm trying to read here, furnished with PCR test products include disclaimers stating that the PCR test should not be used to diagnose COVID-19. Let me read that again. Manufacturer inserts with the test. That's an emergency test that the manufacturer says, you know, isn't safe or effective and says should not be used to diagnose COVID-19. It's the number one test to diagnose COVID-19. Back to the court document. This is consistent with the warning issued by the Nobel Prize winning inventor of the PCR test that such tests are not appropriate for diagnosing disease. On that note, Josie's on the line. Let's get in a couple of comments here. We've got about 4 minutes before Derek joins us. I'm going to pick this up on the other half. Josie, you with me? What do you think?
Hey, great. You're right on the money, Greg.
Well, thank you. I read the court document. I get the easy part.
Yes. I was talking to a nurse yesterday, uh-huh. And she was saying that it seems like they have put saline on many of these vaccines, so not everybody dies at the same time. So some are dying sooner, and some are the other people will die a little later because they diluted the vaccine with saline. That's what she heard about that.
Yes, so that's one of those things that you'd have to test the vaccines to do it, and I don't see why they would do that. Because first of all, that would be a crime in itself, obviously. It sounds like a drug dealer who's cutting the product. In other words, they get pure cocaine and they put a bunch of baking soda in it to sort of that's what it sounds like. I don't know about that. Yeah, but quite honestly, the vaccine by itself is bad enough. You know, who knows what's in it?
It is.
Yeah. Let me see if I can squeak a little bit more. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Huh. I want to see if I can finish this section before Derek gets here. And Anyway, no, go ahead. If you have another point, feel free. Then I want to get back to this.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, stick with me then, because this is going to, you know, I want to know what you think of this too. Anyway, so this is the next part of the court document. Says the way in which the PCR tests are administered guarantees an unacceptably high number of false positives. So every time you hear, the cases are going up, they're false positives. Don't believe it. Okay. The way in which the PCR tests are administered. Okay. Cycle threshold value, that CT value, is essentially the number of times that a sample, usually from a nasal swab, is magnified or amplified before a fragment of viral RNA is detected. In other words, they magnify, they cycle this through 35, 45 times to find the smallest particle of COVID that might be in your system, not enough to infect you, but enough to show up on a test. It says the CT value is exponential, and so a 40-cycle threshold means that the sample is magnified around a trillion times. Oh, that's going to give you an honest result. The higher the CT value, the less likely the detected fragment of viral RNA is intact, alive, and infectious. Let me put that in English. The more times they amplify your test sample on a PCR test, the less its value, the less likely it is to actually, you know, find anything. You know, they're talking about viral RNA. That's the stuff, that's what's in your system that gives you COVID, right? But they won't find it alive, intact, or infectious. It says virtually all scientists, including Dr. Fauci, agree that any PCR test, you know, run at a CT value of 35 cycles or greater is useless, okay? And they've got statements by him. I want to kind of, oh, let me see. A study funded by the French government showed that even at 35 cycles, the false positive rate is as high as 97%. Do you understand that? The false positive rate at 35 cycles is 97%, and in the United States, they run them at 35 to 45 cycles, which means virtually every test for COVID is wrong. What do you think, Josie?
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Yeah.
Okay.
Because
here's the other big.
Because my
go ahead.
My girlfriend got a test done in Colombia, and she was positive, and she already had the COVID, and she needed the test to travel back, and then she said, "That cannot be. I already had the COVID." So she went back to another office, and she had it, and she was negative. So you see, they're playing all these games.
Yeah. Was it a different test? Was it different than the PCR test?
Same test that goes in the nose.
See, they might not have magnified it as many times. Or, you know, they had actually someone who was better at testing. I got Derek on the line. I just want to finish this other section because this is the other big lie, and it's critical for people to understand this. The document says, further, the defendants and their counterparts in state governments, this is all the governors, okay, that did the mandates and lockdowns and masks, the defendants and their counterparts in state governments use the specter of, quote, asymptomatic spread. The notion that fundamentally healthy people could cause COVID-19 in others to justify their purported emergency. That's the thing. If you don't wear a mask and lock down, you're going to kill grandma. That was the lie. That's what they're talking about here. Asymptomatic spread means you don't have symptoms. Okay. Document says, but there is no credible scientific evidence that demonstrates that the phenomenon of asymptomatic spread is real. On the contrary, on June 7, 2020, Dr. Maria von Kerkhove, head of the World Health Organization, the WHO's Emerging Disease and Zoonosis Unit, don't know what that is, told a press conference that from known research, asymptomatic spread was, quote, very rare. I remember that. I heard that quote. From the data we have, it still seems to be rare that an asymptomatic person actually transmits onward to a secondary individual. Okay. Researchers from Southern Medical University in Guangzhou, China, published a study in August 2020 concluding that asymptomatic transmission of COVID-19 is almost non-existent. Almost, Eric. Asymptomatic cases were least likely to infect their close contacts, the researchers found. A more recent study involving nearly 10 million residents of Wuhan, China, found that there were zero positive COVID-19 tests among 1,174 close contacts of asymptomatic cases, indicating the complete absence of asymptomatic transmission. In other words, if you don't have symptoms, you cannot transmit COVID. Everything else you've been told is a lie. Josie?
It's a lie. It's
yeah,
true.
And this is in the court
true,
document.
True.
They're doing this under penalty of perjury, right? They're staying their case under penalty of perjury. This is what makes it so... So important for people to understand that this is, you know, I'm not just reading stuff, an opinion piece. You know, this is an official court document filed. Anyway, Jesse, go ahead. What were you going to say? And I'll get Derek.
All these people should be arrested and in prison. So that's, I want to see that. Who's behind this whole thing? Okay,
well,
you have a blessed day. I'll continue listening. Okay, so
okay,
you
thank
can
you.
Get Derek.
Yeah, well, he's there. I'm just looking for his theme right now. It's right here somewhere. Ah, here we go.
Bye.
Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. Yeah, just to get you caught up, I was reading from the court document, an injunction filed by America's frontline doctors to basically stop all the COVID injections on the emergency use authorization because they violated the law and they're violating the science. So that's where I won. If you want a copy of the lawsuit, it's right on my Facebook page and also in the Action Radio group, or I can send it to you if you are curious. Good morning, sir.
Hey, morning. How you doing?
I think I just said so. No, I don't. No, I'm on a roll. I'm just very. I get very emotionally involved with this stuff because I see this crime unfolding, and there's only so much I can do to stop it. And it's very frustrating to me to not reach millions of people. But we will. We're getting there. We have some interesting contacts just this week that are going to hopefully boost us incredibly. All right, let's talk money. Let's see what's going on in the markets and the official report, and then we'll talk.
All right. Well. This is Derek Park of Edward Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. U.S. equities were little changed on Thursday after the S&P 500's biggest back-to-back advance in 2 months. Asian markets were higher, with Hong Kong a notable outperformer. European markets also rose after the ECB maintained a dovish policy stance. The 10-year yield declined following a rise in weekly jobless claims, partially reversing Wednesday's sharp move higher. Oil was up for the third consecutive session, closing near the levels that prevailed before Monday's 7.6% drop. Technology stocks led the gains, while the cyclical stock sectors lagged, suggesting a cautious market undertone. The U.S. equities were all higher today, with the Dow Jones up 25 points, or 0.07, to 34,823. NASDAQ closed up 53 points, or 0.36 to 14,685, and the S&P 500 closed up 9 points, or 0.2 to 43,68. In the bond market, 10-year Treasury yield is trading at 1.26%. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up $1.43, or 2.03% to $71.73, and the spot price of gold was up $4.20, or 0.23 to 1807.60. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
I'm surprised they don't give the rate of inflation in with the report. I don't know if Edward Jones wants to do that, but and you probably know what it is. You know, you're probably charting this weekly to see what's happening. But why isn't the inflation part of the report, and where do we stand with it right now?
So inflation is not part of the report, probably because they don't put it in there. But we have a sheet that has like rates and figures and things like that that we can mm-hmm. send out to people, and okay. It typically puts CPI on there. Actually, to be honest, I haven't looked at it this week. I've had kind of a little bit of a busy week, but last I looked at it, it was 4.21, I think it was.
Interesting. Okay, CPI is Consumer Price Index?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and that's what they call the inflation measure? They don't have a category called inflation.
Yeah, that is the inflation measure, yeah, CPI.
Okay. You know, that's misleading in a way, because it sort of gives the impression that the increase in prices is inflation rather than the increase in the money supply causing the increase in price. They should call it the money supply index, the MSI. That would make more sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or they should call it the lagging inflation indicator.
Okay, explain that. That's interesting. Well, explain lagging and leading indicators, because I don't think we ever talked about that. That might be something good for people to know.
So, I mean, in order for the Fed to report, I mean, it's in order for something to happen, mm-hmm. you know, in the market, or even with inflation, with prices and things like that, I mean, the change has to happen, and then the action has to happen. So they're all lagging indicators. Meaning okay. that once it's already going on, you should have either if you had paid any attention to anything, you should have known that it was going on,
okay.
you know, and then the government comes and tells you that it's going on. You know, I mean, it's kind of
majority know what's going on.
right.
Yeah. You know, okay.
So, I mean, I've been sitting with my clients for well over a year, you know, and been telling them, I'm like, hey, you've been buying food lately? You know, have you seen certain prices on certain things starting to increase? And they're like, mm-hmm. yeah. And then the government's like, oh, we're experiencing heightened inflation. I'm like, gee, thanks, you know, Captain Obvious.
we've seen it. Yeah, exactly. We knew that when you closed down the pipelines, you stupid morons. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello?
So,
Okay, that's just me talking. Okay, you don't have to, you know, you can say that's you talking,
okay.
Greg. You know, feel free to. I want to be really open and honest about that. And this goes not just for you, but for anybody. If you're in a position where you can't tell me something or you don't want to, just say, look, that's you talking. And, you know, my opinion is this, and you know, I'm responsible for that. And I know as a financial advisor, there are only certain things you can say, and people should know that. Okay, so if you can't say something, don't be afraid to say, I can't say that, or I'm not going to go there. You know, I understand, and I want to make that very clear to people that we are the cutting edge of freedom. We are the ultimate free speech zone. And sometimes we go so far that people can't go into some of the things that maybe I will bring up. That's just a normal part of this show. How's that for a disclaimer?
No, that's true. I'm actually looking at a figure that says that it's only like 3.1. So I may have been off on that. It says that the last thing that I read was a 4.2% increase. Forgive me, is what had happened. Averaging over months up to 5%. So yeah, it is right around 3%, but it's on the climb.
Yeah, no, I've seen either estimates or forecasts or actual reports. Forecast is what's going to happen. Report is what is happening. Just to let people know, we used to do that with aviation weather. And I had to teach my flight students when I was teaching flying. I said, a forecast is a guess, folks. They don't know what's going to happen. You know, a report is what actually happened. So you can use the reports and take the forecast and make your best judgment. But nothing is absolute in the future. That's why it's the future. Tell the same people, you know, it's like, hey, if I had a crystal ball, I tell you, you know, we'd all be rich. Okay. It doesn't work that way. But a leading indicator, you're chuckling, right? But a leading indicator versus a lagging indicator. So leading indicator is going to indicate what's going to happen. In other words, you can use that to predict the future to a certain extent. Lagging is like Derek says, it's already happened. You should have known it already. So to me, a leading indicator would be spending, you know, trillions of dollars on a stimulus to pay people not to work. That would, you know, with the requisite printing of money. That to me is a leading indicator that we're going to be going into an inflation cycle. You know, because
right. That is a leading indicator. But where their misconception was their misconception was that the fact that we shut down the economy, it kind of would come back and levelize, right? Like it would come back in, kind of make things normal. Well, that would have been fine if they would have slowed down the money supply, stopped, you know, stopped the printing press.
Right.
You know, you can't be injecting money. You got to have less money in the economy to buy the same things, right? Mm-hmm. Like not continue to pump money. The next thing is you know, they should have shut off the unemployment benefits. You know what I mean? Like basically say, hey, we're going to turn the juice off on this. So like, I will tell you an experience I just experienced Wednesday of this week. You know, where Florida still has little bits of loopholes where people, if they go do an interview and you know, they have that record of doing the interview, they can still get benefits. And you know, one of my businesses can't hire qualified people because everybody will come in, do the interview, and then boom, they disappear.
Yeah, and they go back on welfare, basically unemployment welfare. Yeah. Oh, I know it's unemployment welfare.
So
because if you're able-bodied,
incentivize not working, which, you know, when you have a bunch of people not working, you have government doling out money. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, because you're not creating wealth. You're paying. And this is Keynesian economy nonsense that says if you stimulate the economy through government spending, the economy is going to grow. Well, it can't grow because the only government spending either comes from printing of money or taking money that's already been created. So you're not making anything. You're not generating anything. You're not taking, you know, labor plus raw materials combined with services to create a larger, better product that can be sold and then resold and then resold. You know, and this is, you know, I mean, you want to talk about wealth. Wealth is like a car. It takes an engineer. It takes raw materials. It takes labor. It takes machines to make it. You know, there's aftermarket parts. There's sales, there's retail sales. There's future sales. There's, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So a car actually generates a hell of a lot of wealth, you know, for a lot of people. That's a good thing. Okay, that's how economy grows. When they talk about growth in the economy, you know, real growth is based on the real creation of wealth. Labor plus raw materials plus services combining together to, you know, make a bigger, a better finished product than the raw materials going into it. You're creating something. Okay. That's how wealth is created. But the idea that government can create anything by simply paying people money, especially paying people not to work, is insane. So here's the question too. The Biden administration, I'll get back to inflation in a minute, but Biden administration? God, I didn't need the gong. How dare I? I'm so sorry. The thief in chief, the usurper, the insurrectionist in the White House right now, is saying that we've created all these new jobs, when it looks to me like all they've done is counted the jobs where people went back to work from jobs that were previously locked out because they weren't essential. They're counting those as new jobs, and they're really not. Are you seeing that?
No, not really. There's obviously a lot of stuff going on, but as of right now, like, let me say no. I mean, that's not to say that it's not happening. It briefs really well. I mean, obviously, you know how things move, and I mean, you're kind of abreast of things more than the common bear.
Right.
You know, when other people just kind of live their lives, you know, I mean, like it's pretty complacent, I guess, is the way I see it. But, I guess across the board.
Yeah. See, that surprises me. I thought they were counting jobs where people just went back to work to their regular job that they were forced out of. They were counting those as newly created jobs. If they're not, then that's interesting. Okay. But what they are doing is this, you know, the jobless rate is increasing. Now, is that the jobless rate, as you were saying, of people voluntarily not working because they can sit at home, or are these actually, the economy is actually suffering because of inflation and employers can't hire people because it costs too much with the extra cost they're incurring, you know, because of the inflation? Which one do you think?
Well, it's not only that. The people that will do the work. I mean, you're overworking these people. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you know, in the case of this employer, like that I was just talking about, I mean, you know, they have a small staff, which their staff, a full staff is like 10 people. You know, they have 6 people in there. And I mean, these people, you know, they only work 4 days a week to do what they do. And, you know, these 4 people are having to come in early. They're having to stay late. You know what I mean? So that's more hours that they have to pay. That's overtime. You know what I mean? Like, you know, more hands make light work kind of thing. And there's just not enough to handle their business load. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, in the specialty that they are, you know, so I mean, it's, they got more business coming in than they know what to do with, which ultimately can end up in lost business because people will go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know,
those other companies probably have the same thing though. Yeah. I think this is universal that all companies are suffering from the same problem. Huh.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just them. It's just, you know, you would think in the type of industry that they are and in the type of people that they would attract and the type of pay that it wouldn't be a problem, but it's kind of scary, that people are so selfish that they would rather just go collect free money. And hurt everybody, you know what I mean? And it's like if you think about this, everybody wants to fix America, right? They'll tell you that they want to fix America, but there is a small 20 percentile that just really doesn't give a crap. You know what I mean? Like, they'll just run this country into the ground because you know, it's their own greed and their own selfishness. And I mean, I say this all the time, and I mean this with the utmost respect and the utmost well-being. Sometimes we are too free, you know, like we're basically free to make these decisions that destroy other people. Yeah.
I would say we are too, well, and I know what you're getting at, and I'm not trying to take all the validity out of your statement. I wouldn't say we are too free because I would say that freedom implies responsibility. Okay. So when a leftist thinks of freedom, they think of what you can get for free. That's their idea of freedom. So in that respect, that's wrong. So in other words, you know, a right, for example, a right is what you exercise that the government can't touch, but you're not given stuff. You got to earn it. In other words, Second Amendment, you know, you're not issued a gun to exercise your Second Amendment rights. Okay. You got to go out and, you know, buy your own gun. Okay. But what the government cannot do is stop you from owning and carrying it by the Second Amendment. Same thing here. People think that, healthcare is a right. Well, no, it's not. Because anything that comes from somebody else's labor, from somebody else's money, is not a right for you. Because in order to exercise that right, you have to take something from somebody else. And anytime you do that, that's not a right. So if we clearly, you know, make a distinction between, you know, a right that you exercise freely that you've enabled to happen, as opposed to a right that you think you should be given something. So we don't have too much freedom. What we really have is too much misdefinition of what a right is. Okay. You don't have a right to anything. Okay. Of substance. What you do have the right is to exercise that right. So rights are exist in their exercising, not in their ability for you to get stuff. Does that make sense?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. No, that does. And much more words. You know, I mean, I just say, you know, I mean, it's
oh, much more
you're
words.
Free to
do I do that.
You're not free from consequence. And I think that our culture and our country is mm-hmm. very weak on the consequences. Yep. You know, I mean, you've got these people who are extorting the system. You know, yeah. like I'll use this for an example because this is what we're talking about. You have people that are extorting the system, mm-hmm. and you know, ideally, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that there should be an agency, but you know, there should be a little bit of a checks and balance. You know, I mean, you've got somebody that goes to check, you know, the place, and actually, this employer, this individual, basically said that they got an email from the Florida Board of Labor that said that there's a certain thing that they have to go do that checks whether they did something or not. And this individual, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, they didn't know how to do that. And obviously now they're doing this, but I mean, you have to understand they're a year behind, right?
Mm-hmm.
They just found out about this and how many individuals, but I mean, you know, this is just one little area and one little business. So, you know, and I mean, they have a work staff and, you know, this individual basically said that it was a low number of people. They said like, what is it? 1 out of 3, would come back, you know, would come back and talk to him. But even that 1 out of 3 was probably not the most qualified candidate. You know, some of these other people that were qualified are still abusing the system because they're making just as much money to sit at mm-hmm. home to get free money from the government.
See, now I thought Florida cut back on that. I thought they had denied the
so,
federal
so, so did
money
I.
for that.
I saw that, but what they did was they changed the rule that says, you know, you had to have a proof of an interview. You know, in yeah. order, you know, they basically didn't say, hey, you're not out of work. We're just going to give you this money. Now you had to have proof of an interview. You know, I mean, and some of this stuff should be reported. I wouldn't even know where to start with this.
You know what I would do? I need to talk to off the air, obviously. I want to talk to some of your small business friends. And I want to see if we can, you know, this would be a good chance for a bill. And this would be a good chance. See, elections are coming up. So we're going to have a great time between this November and next November to have some amazing impact on legislators who are going to be listening very intently, you know, to what the constituents are saying. And if we have some small businesses to say, and we can do this right now, we don't have to wait, because I know there's some legislators, local and well, one I'm going to mention, Anthony Sabatini, who I'm hoping to get on the show here at some point fairly soon. We've been talking, you know, he's been on the show before, but I'd like to get him some ideas. And one of the good ones would be to change that rule that says, you know, if you have if you've looked for a job, and with that there should be a checkoff, there should be something for the employer to fill out. So in other words, an interview, if someone's doing it and they're on unemployment, the employer who grants the interview should say, was there a bona fide job offer? And if that goes into it, and they say, well, if you, you know, so now you have the employee or the person on unemployment saying, yeah, I went to an interview, but it didn't work out, so I didn't get the job. Okay, fine, you get the money. We now have to have another place where the employer comes in, where they contact the employer. And they can do this by samples. They don't have to do everybody, but they can sample and say, well, did you, you know, was there a bona fide job offer? Or have the employers automatically, with someone who's on unemployment, make it that they have to disclose that, and then they fill out their own, you know, form that says, yes, this was a bona fide job offer. We offered this person a job. They turned it down. That should be a disqualification for further unemployment payments because they were offered a job and they refused it. You shouldn't get unemployment benefits if you're refusing work that you can do.
Yeah, they, you know, actually, I think there would be an easier way to do that, to be honest. I mean,
okay.
I would think
what's
that
easier
all
way?
Of the, all of the, you know, like Indeed and Glassdoor and all of that stuff, they should have any time a resume is uploaded, it mm-hmm. is linked to the Department of Labor. And, you know, there just needs to be a button on there when the employer, you know, goes onto their side and says mm-hmm. whether they were hired or not, or whether they were interviewed, what the process was, and they click on a button and it's reported. You know what I mean? Like that is, and how about this? I mean, do you know that would probably really reduce under the table type stuff? You know,
yeah.
I mean, like, so it,
yeah.
it'd probably be in for the government across the board. Not that I'm saying under, look, I mean, if you've got a little kid in the neighborhood, and I've did this stuff, right? Little kid in the mm-hmm. neighborhood, and you need him to pick up trash and, you know, mow the lawn. Okay, you pay the kid cash. You know what I mean? Like, no big deal there. But, I mean, if you've got guys building houses that are paid by cash, which I have seen before, by the way,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, I mean, you kind of eliminate a portion of that. I'm not saying it's all going to go away, you know, because hearsay and people hiring people and, you know, I know a guy,
yeah.
you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, it's all things that I think we do wrong, and everybody, look at it like this. You know, I mean, if they can pop up a government agency in Florida and California all of a sudden to start policing, you know, people that are tied to the Capitol Police that are, you know, worried about people that were involved, all of a sudden this, both of these agencies just pop up, right? There's money to do that. There's money to fix the labor system. You know what I mean? Like, there's plenty of that. It's just, you know, like what we do with our money is just asinine sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I this makes a lot of sense. I was thinking that I am always suspicious of how much information we want to give government agencies. But if an employee is, or a prospective employee is someone on unemployment is going to a job application and using a particular company listing, I went there for an interview. The company, what they could do is in a separate action, and then they can match these up. You know how an employer, you know, gives your income information to the state IRS, well, not, and then the federal, because we don't have a state income tax, but it's basically a federal, but a lot of places have state income tax, right? And so whatever taxes you're paying, if you pay state tax, you know, your employer, well, they do for your withholding, Social Security, Medicare, disability, right? So that information is reported to the government. All right. So what they could do is have a system where they would report job interviews. So in other words, someone comes to an employer for a job interview and they can, you know, for when there was a bona fide offer, of course, this can be abused too. Everything can be abused. There is no ideal here. But if employers in a separate function to the Department of Labor would report, you know, in given weeks, you know, who they offered jobs to, and they could match the names. Or even social, well, I wouldn't do Social Security, but they can match the names, or I don't know how unemployment tracks people, but if you're on unemployment, you've given an identification number, they can match that up and say, is, you know, is this person, you know, match them up as the same person. But there should be a way for employers to document they made job offers, you know, separately from the employee. I mean, to the Department of Labor, so they can find out, well, wait a minute. And they can say to the person on unemployment, well, you received a job offer. You know, why didn't you take it from X company?
Right.
You know, and then they, yeah. I don't know. I think that's how I do it. But if you want some small business folks to talk to me and they want to come up with something like that, you know, they know the regulations. They know them better than I do. So they know where it is in the law. They tell me where, well, I'll put them on the air if they want to. You know, put them on the air and let's work on this, and we'll find out where it is in law. We'll do some research and we'll say, okay, how do we modify this? And then we get it to some of our local state representatives and state senators and say, hey, we need you to fix this. That's how we do it. That's Action Radio. Yeah.
I've got a feeling that's at the back of the list.
Gee, how long is our list now? We have so many things to do. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody's listening, you know, if any of you folks out there are listening and you want to, you know, do that, you know, all you do is go to writeyourlaws.com. That's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com, and you write the bill. And then, you know, I'll have, you know, contact information for you. I can get back to you and we can talk. And then if you have a good enough bill, we'll get you on the air. We'll work with you. We'll make it a better bill and we'll get it right to our representatives and to everybody else in the show too, so that they can lobby it. That's Action Radio. That's how it works. Yeah. Anyway, I got some contacts I can't tell you about yet, but you know, we're making some headway here. I think we're getting closer and closer to that national breakthrough where we get to, you know, that first million listeners. Josie's back in the line. I'm going to take care of it. I got Jim in the line too. I'll make his line live. We can chat a little bit before we get to guns. I want to make sure we've covered everything that Derek wants. So let's go, Josie and Jim. And Josie, why don't you go ahead? You have a question for Derek?
I just wanted to tell Derek, thank you for your report. I appreciate to hear you when you come out. I also wanted to say I've been interviewing a lot of people, but a few that I have interviewed, they don't qualify for the position. And I notice a lot of people, they're like hairdressers with licenses, nurses, CNA, that they have top for a retail position. Why in the heck are they, you know, with career. Why do they want to come and work for a retail store? And a lady with high credentials, she applied. And when I call her, she goes, I'm not interested in the job. And the percentage of people that I make appointments, they don't show up, they don't text me, they don't call, nothing. So I'm very disappointed, and I want to report all those people.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
you shall receive. This is how we do it. Yeah. Go ahead, Derek.
It's sad that you know, I mean, I sit down with these folks and, you know, I know some industries are going to, you know, struggle hiring people, like,
you know, your lawn maintenance, your construction, the physical labor type thing. And mm-hmm. you know, I mean, a lot of people don't want to get out there, and it takes a special person. I mean that in the best sense. I'm not saying that, but like, you've got these other jobs that are available. Like, you know, the employer that I just spoke about, they have two positions that really don't require any experience, and they're paying $16 an hour, right? Like $16 an hour starting. Yeah. And that's not – they're not doing that because, you know, laws or anything. That's what the position pays. I mean, $16 an hour, no experience, you know, 32 hours a week. But most people right now are getting 40, if not more, because of the workload that they have. But 32 hours a week, you know, I mean, there is some benefits that come with it. You know, there are some that not. But, I mean, still, it's like, you know, people – I know people in my area that – you know, I mean, they would jump all over that because they're only making 13 to do the same job. You know what I mean? And it's they're in a little bit of a different area. Cost of living is a little bit higher, but you know, the bottom line is like, you have these opportunities and people qualified to do it. And I mean, they won't, because we're incentivizing no work. And we think this is okay. You know what I mean? Like, as a culture, as a society. And I mean, it's just, I get to see the wrath of that. You know what I mean? Like, the common person that works every day doesn't get to see what I see, which, you know, I think it would be very enlightening if you sat down with somebody and said, hey, here's what's going on. And then you show them and they would be like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, but some of these people, I mean, I know one probably in particular that you could go ask them and they would just be like, well, it's my benefit. I'm entitled it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's kind of sickening.
You know what I should do is, I know, Derek, you're really busy and Josie's busy too, but if we could form kind of a small business coalition that might be interested in writing some new regulations and new legislation, I'll get you two guys. Derek has his phone number anyway. Josie, if you want to contact Derek, and Derek, if you have time for this, you know, you guys work out something. And if we get a small business group, then Josie can head it up and we'll have like a small business roundtable maybe once a week, maybe every couple of weeks, something like that. But let's start working on some of these small business regulations. Because you, Josie, don't you have to pay something into unemployment? You know, for every employee, so all these folks can get their freebies?
We do.
Okay.
Yes, we do, for unemployment. So who do I contact to complain about all these people not even bothering showing up for the interview? And right now I told my husband, I'm not even looking at none of the applications coming in. Enough is enough. I'm wasting my time. I'm making an appointment. I'm calling people. They don't even bother showing up at all. So this is bad.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a break. I'm going to have to work 6 days a week right now. So.
Wow. Yeah. Derek, who could she call?
Yeah, I wouldn't even know where to go. I mean, I would assume that you'd have to go to, Department of Labor if it's in Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you'd have to report Florida. You know, I mean, that'd be the only thing that I would know where to go. And I mean, you have to understand, like, it, you know, you need to be spending your time in your business, not tracking down these people that are abusing the system. You know, I mean,
don't have the time. I don't have time for this game. And this is a little game that this crooked Biden administration has created. And a lot of the illegals are coming by the thousands to take the jobs of the American people temporarily. But they're not leaving once they get here, see? So this economy is going to collapse.
Yeah, I say what we do is we go down to Cuba. All these people that can't find work, we offer them amnesty. And, you know, these people, and we import them.
Import Cubans? That's not a bad idea.
Hey, the way I see it is if they can wave an American flag while our people burn it, we just support it with people that love our country and love our way of life.
Not a bad idea. We could work on immigration too to boost Cuban immigration. Yeah. Okay.
How about that? You know, I mean, I say that jokingly with a little bit of seriousness in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing you said earlier is it takes a certain kind of person to work on a rooftop and things like that. And quite frankly, that would be Americans who are unemployed, who want to work, who don't get unemployment.
Right.
You know, this idea that foreigners or illegal aliens are the only ones that can, taking jobs that Americans don't want to do. Americans have always done every job. And we've got to get that myth out of the way right away.
When I say special person, though, Greg, like I mean somebody who you know has balance, has hand and eye coordination, doesn't mind the sun beating on them while they're doing that. You know what I mean? Like there's some people, like
you know, I'll use, you know, a good close personal friend of mine. I mean, uh-huh. you know, the guy is like, you know, weighs about what a paper does, you know, and I mean, he's about, you know, he's about the color of the paper. So, I mean, you know, if he wasn't wearing clothing or sunblock, I mean, he'd probably burn up, you know, I mean, it's just, like I said, yeah. some people, it takes a special person and somebody with the acumen to say, okay, hey, I'm willing to go out there and swing a hammer. Yeah. You know, it's just
no,
like
good. I just want to make sure that you're not talking about the common myth. Yeah. All right. No, I don't know. Listen, no. I worked on the golf course at one of my earlier jobs, and I had clothing from head to foot because I burned really easily too. But I mean, you know, I still had to work on a golf course. It was one of those times. All right. I'm going to get Jim on the line here and see if there's any reaction. Josie's gone. Derek, I'm sure you're welcome to stick around too, or if you have to leave, you know, feel free. Jim, do you have any comments on this before we talk guns?
No, I actually jumped in here towards the very end, so I'm not going to try to offer an opinion on something that I haven't heard a whole lot about.
Well, that makes sense, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're always welcome to listen earlier, too, to catch the earlier part of the show, if you have a chance to do that. Derek, same thing. Anyway, let's get on to you, and we'll be talking guns.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun. Probably a Desert Eagle, 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
This is what I love Fridays. I get to talk money with Derek and guns and Jim. It's just too much fun. I mean, does it get better than this, folks? I mean, really, now. All right, sir, what do we got today?
Well, I know that you are excited to talk about President Biden's CNN comments, but I was going to do one story before that.
Oh, feel free. This is your report. You can set the agenda.
So this one's an interesting one, just because I don't get to speak about things that happen internationally very often. And we actually had an international Second Amendment story this week.
Wow.
So on today, the Czech Parliament actually approved a constitutional amendment recognizing the right to use arms in self-defense and to protect others.
Okay, hold on a second. You're breaking up a little bit, so what I want you to do is turn your gain down on your microphone a little bit. You're starting to break up a bit, and so we missed we missed the data as well. Just turn it down. Don't worry. You got a big booming voice like me. Don't worry, you'll be fine. So you get just a little bit away from the microphone, a couple more inches or an inch or so away, and just but it's booming. So yeah, turn your volume up in your headset.
There we go.
Gain down on the microphone. Yeah. And if anybody wants to do podcasts, you can listen. I'll give lessons for that too. I had to do exactly the same thing. So Czech Parliament.
Is this
interesting. Yeah, that sounds much better. This is interesting. Okay. I want to hear more about this. Have the actual amendment?
Yeah, so I actually don't have the exact wording of the amendment. But part of the amendment does say the right to defend one's life or the life of others, even with the use of weapons, is guaranteed.
Interesting. Now, of course, the gelding Republicans are jumping all over this thing. Look, they're having a wonderful amendment in Czechoslovakia. The Czech Republic. We should be at least boosting our Second Amendment here. I mean, the Republicans are all over this, you know, boosting this, aren't they? I mean, as a counter to Biden. I mean, the geldings are really out front on this, aren't they? How much more rhetorical should I get?
I could actually hear you speaking.
Where'd you go? You cut out again.
Going to call in by the phone because I think it'd be an internet connection issue because you were dropping on the receive side too. So let me switch over to the phone real quick.
Okay, I'll wait. In the meantime, let me play you a piece, one of our Biden. Yeah, this is pretty good.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no Space Force, no Constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
So that was my Joe Biden dark winter piece, and I made that before the election. But pretty much everything I predicted is coming true, which always scares me when I'm going to get that accurate. But, yeah, that sounds better. And I've had to do shows by cell phone before, too. So we'll get your internet and microphone issues. As far as I know, I'm doing fine. No one has said anything about my connection, so maybe it's just, you know, where you are. Jonathan Mosley has the same problem with his cell phone, ironically. So I'm trying to get him a microphone.
And you
do better on cell phone. Yeah.
I think mine was probably an internet issue. We had a bad thunderstorm here the other day, and power went out. So I may need to restart my modem and get it up, because I have gigabit Ethernet, so it shouldn't be a bandwidth issue.
Yeah, here's what I find, too, and just as for anybody else that's going to get a microphone call in, or just if you're doing a podcast, you know, the fewer browser windows you have open, the better. Of course, I can't help having, like, 20 because I need them for the show. And the fewer things attached to your computer, so like you pull out the printer, pull out the things you don't need, and make an Ethernet connection, make a hardwire connection, all those things help connecting to the internet, direct connection, things like that. And
I've got all of those going on with the exception of browser windows. So, you know, I probably have a little better than you. I have about 10 open.
And I got like 12 emails I have to send out, you know, as well. So hey, listen, Jim, we're all going to be nationally known figures, you know, one day. It's going to be fascinating when you give your report to millions of people. You know, it's going to be exciting. It's going to happen. You know, I know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. So your gun of the week might cause, you know, a surge in gun sales across the country. Think of that, you know, as we work out these little details now.
There we go. Always good. So back to the check story, a great quote from one of the members of parliament. He's a member of the Civic Democratic Party, which I guess is kind of a center-right party. And he said, disarming citizens does not bring more safety because criminals get their weapons illegally. So even the Czechs.
Great person. The Czechs do get it. Well, I think, you know, a lot of Europe gets it too, but Europe's been subjugated for so long. I mean, they came from monarchies. They don't have a tradition of individual rights and individual self-defense, except the Swiss. So if you want to look into a case study, this might be a good thing for next week, the current status of the Swiss, because they were required to keep, you know, at least semi-automatic. I've heard fully automatic, but they're required to keep arms. Everybody serves in the Swiss armed forces, everybody. And then they're required to keep working firearms, you know, at least military grade in their house. And, of course, you know all the dangers of being in Switzerland with all those assault weapons out there, right? It's one of the safest countries in the world. Have you been to Switzerland, by the way? Have you had a chance to travel Europe?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah, I've actually been to one of their big military training sites over there.
Oh, interesting. Tell me about it. And how am I doing on accuracy for the civilian population once they've, you know, done their military service? Is that still enforced?
Yeah, I have not looked in recently, but I can tell you, yes, when I was there, the males in Switzerland who were required to perform military service, after their military service, had their rifles that they kept in their home. And it was also fairly easy to be able to possess hunting rifles and things like that. And the Czech training facility was actually a very, very well-designed, I would almost say over-designed facility. I was looking at their urban – the Swiss training facility. I think I said Czech. Their facility was possibly even over-engineered. It was an urban combat training facility, and very, very, very highly mechanized. They had everything from high speed cameras throughout to some stairwells that would simulate collapsing, they had, you know, loud speaker systems throughout. So it was kind of interesting to go in and kind of compare what they did to what we did. They also had an awful lot of things like artillery simulators that they would actually bury out in the fields so that as their soldiers were approaching the village, they could have these explosions in front of them to simulate artillery that may be coming in.
Wow. Yeah, I think Switzerland has been 400 years without any invasion, you know, so they weren't touched by World War II, World War I, you know, the Napoleon, you know, these folks, I think, invaded Switzerland because everybody's been armed in Switzerland since they carried spears, you know, and bows and arrows. I mean, it's been a longstanding tradition. Yes, they have mountainous terrain and all that other good stuff, but I remember when I was there, I stayed in Interlaken. That was my favorite place. Went to a few other places, but Interlaken was absolutely beautiful. Went to see the Eiger, but I remember fighter jets would routinely fly through the mountains, you know, and talking to the Swiss, I mean, everything is orderly, everything's manicured beyond belief. So, and everything's over-engineered. It was one of the prettiest countries I've ever seen. It's boring. It works so well, you know, it's a little complex here. Let's go back to America. I'm used to a little more, gutter traffic problems, you know, but anyway, but the point was that, and the Swiss are very proud of that, but I was curious, now, do they have concealed carry permits or they can they openly carry firearms or what's the policy on handguns?
I do not believe that they have any kind of handgun carry permitting in Switzerland. I don't know about the rules for ownership within the home, but
so they can or cannot carry, as far as you know.
To the best of my knowledge, they cannot carry handguns.
Okay, all right, just curious. Well, the reason I'm asking is because I know with the Czech Republic, CZ handguns, isn't that a Czech product? It's one of the best, you know, 9mm out there. Okay.
And CZ, or I'm sorry, the Czech Republic actually does have a concealed carry system.
Oh.
So.
Interesting. And this is a country that was invaded by, it was invaded by the Soviet Union at one point. So they have a strong, you know, I guess, national need and tendency to want to go for civilian self-defense because if people can protect themselves against, you know, criminals, they can also protect themselves against any potential invaders having been invaded up until when did Czechoslovakia get their independence? Somewhere around 60, 65? From the Soviet Union?
Sometime in the mid to late 60s, I think.
It's not that long ago. It's not that long ago. You got a lot of people alive today who were under, you know, you listen to Sebastian Gorka, who's from Hungary. You know, his parents were tortured by the communists. So you've got a lot of people that, you know, and gun rights, I think, would be the first thing that all Eastern Europeans, I mean, that'd be something interesting to look at. I mean, what are the gun rules in Poland and Romania and Bulgaria and all these places that were completely oppressed, you know, on the other side of the Iron Curtain? We didn't expect to talk about this, folks. We're just going with what, you know, wherever we go.
Go ahead. You know, before you think it's a panacea in the Czech Republic, they do require a license to possess a firearm. So owning a firearm, even one that you just keep in your home, requires a license from the government. So you know, I'd say they're not perfect, but by European standards, they're pretty close.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it'd be interesting to sort of watch this and see where they go, especially as the Biden speech. Now, I haven't actually seen it. I've only seen the clips of it because I can't watch him. I mean, I just want to get sick. I mean, it's scary to think that there are those that put him there and there are those that allow him to stay there in terms of legally, you know, or not using the legal means to remove him, like the audits and the changing of the electors and things like that. It's scary to me that the tolerance of this theft of the White House and all the damage that's being done, you know, and it's like, how long do these people expect this to go on? How, you know, we you know, do something. You know, this is the time for people to do something. This is, as Thomas Paine said, you know, this is not the time to be the summer soldier and the, you know, it's time to stand up and be counted. And so some states are doing it. Arizona, you know, other places, Georgia, Pennsylvania are looking into this. And they may finally correct this election and do the right thing and get the correct, you know, vote count. But the tolerance for this kind of thing staggers me. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, since we've transitioned over to Biden's speech, part of it, he made
what did
the
he
statement
say?
That – what's that?
I said, what did he say? I mean, I'm kind of curious. I know I've heard some of the bits, but
yeah. So one of the statements he made is, and this is a direct quote from his speech: "The idea that you need a weapon that can have the ability to fire 20, 30, 40, 50, 120 shots from that weapon, mm-hmm. whether it's a 9mm pistol or whether it's a rifle, is ridiculous." So. Not only is he attacking AR-15s, which are the most popular rifle sold in the United States, but now he's apparently attacking 9mm pistols, which are the most popular pistols sold in the United States.
Yeah, and but it was interesting. I still remember Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, and one of the things they talked about was when they did studies of civilian self-defense against tyrannical governments, the most useful tool of civilian self-defense is the semi-automatic rifle, in other words, the AR-15, you know, in the United States. So that it makes sense that from a government, from a tyrannical perspective, the very first gun that they would want to confiscate is the one that's already documented to be the most useful in resisting tyranny. You know, the AR-15.
Right.
You know, and the second
That makes perfect sense because, you know, a semi-automatic rifle is one which can be fired fairly rapidly, not as rapidly as an automatic rifle, obviously, but fairly rapidly. And because it's semi-automatic and not automatic, can be fired much more accurately. So that is the reason why people tend to like semi-automatic rifles in the first place. Is
we can afford
an automatic rifle.
I can't afford a fully automatic. I go through ammo so fast.
Even,
if I had a fully
automatic. Even if you could afford one, they're just not accurate to shoot because of the repeated recoil. It's very difficult to keep an automatic rifle on target, even if you practiced with it. I mean, you can get better and better as you practice, but even people who are good with an automatic rifle, it's not made for accurate shooting. It's made to do things like suppress fire from someone who's shooting at you. So you
keep
make
their heads
them
down,
put
so
their
to
head
speak.
Down because there's a lot of shots coming their way. So they tend not to lift their head up to be able to shoot their weapon. That's one of the things it's good for.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've never been in a combat, but I did do a lot of competitions where I was in the pit at the other end where you're below ground level and you can actually hear the sonic boom of a bullet cracking overhead. And so, you know, you don't have to see the bullets to know that they're flying above you. And for anybody that's never experienced that either in combat or in, I used to do the Department of Civilian Marksmanship, the DCM competitions with a Garand, which I'm not particularly accurate with. My body ergonomics, I cannot hold those things steady enough and my head's too big to actually get down and use those little sights. But it was interesting. It was challenging. It was interesting serving in the pit, listening to the sound of bullets cracking overhead because they're making little sonic booms as long as they're faster than the speed of sound. And so that would keep your head down. Yeah. I'm sure you have experience with this.
Yeah, and even a round, like a pistol round that's not traveling supersonic, makes a very distinctive sound as it goes by you. You don't get the crack that you do from a sonic boom, but you do get a sound that is very, very distinctive.
I haven't heard that because I was always doing rifle targeting. The pistol targets, you just shoot the paper and nobody's out in front of those. You're looking, when the range is clear, then take a look and get a closer look. But we all had our scopes and things like that. So what does the pistol round sound like?
It's kind of difficult to describe because it's not like anything else. Almost like air escaping quickly from a tire or something. But very, very quick. So it's like I said, it's not like any other sound. It's very distinct. Once you hear it and you hear it again, you know exactly what it is, but it doesn't sound exactly like anything else, so it's hard to describe something that's comparable to it.
Yeah, and with a handgun, you're probably going to be close enough to hear the gun going off as opposed to a rifle that you might hear especially on like a 1,000-yard shot or something like that. You're going to hear the crack of the sonic boom, like a second before you're going to hear. Because I remember the travel when I was in 1,000-yard competitions for the 30-06, 190 grain Sierra hollow point bow tail. We're getting detailed here, folks. Okay. It took a second and a half to travel that 1,000 yards. That's a long time.
Right.
A lot of things could happen in that time too. Yeah.
And that sonic boom that you hear is one of the reasons that suppressors don't work the way that anti-gun people would like you to believe.
Okay.
Because when you suppress a supersonic round, while you reduce some of the sound at the muzzle. There's nothing that you can do to stop the sound from the crack when that bullet goes supersonic.
But they're really this is another thing we should talk about. We're all over the place today, so if you want to pick up next week on certain topics, but one of the ones that bugs me and has always bugged me is the idea that people have to defend themselves, which may be me someday, you know, in our homes with handguns that are loud enough to damage our hearing. So you have to make a trade-off between saving your life and losing hearing, or losing your life if it's a life and death situation. And I don't think that's a fair trade-off. I think there's no reason why people can't have, you know, enough of a suppression of, or even use subsonic ammunition, which is going to be, you know, just fine, certainly in a home situation, where you don't have to lose, you know, a major part of your hearing just to save your life. That has never made sense to me.
Right. And that's an argument that is made often by people who support removing suppressors from the list of NFA items.
Yeah, I do.
It's a combination of that and the fact that when you do things like hunt and go to the range, you're reducing noise pollution both for yourself and others.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the interesting thing for anybody that's been to a range, with anybody that has one of those muzzle brakes at the end of a barrel, especially the 50 caliber, you know, the shooter doesn't hear as much, but the people on either side get blasted.
Oh, yeah.
I've been on either side. I've moved.
And you know, and I'm one of those guys that has muzzle brakes on a lot of my rifles. So I'm
one
of those guys. Probably.
You're one of those guys. Huh? All right. Now he tells me. Okay. Fine. Anyway, I think I've monopolized enough of your time. Did you have... You want to cover something else before you have to go? I don't have to go soon.
Well, I figured, you know, since we're still, you know, on the Biden talk, I'd add a few other things. You know,
he actually
admits that he doesn't have the votes to get done that he would like to get done. His exact quote was, I'm continuing to push to eliminate the sale of those things, again, talking about 9mm pistols and rifles, but I'm not likely to get that done in the near term. So, you know, he knows that he doesn't have the votes to do it, which is why he's pushing to do as much as he can through the executive branch using the ATF.
Yeah. See, I mean, I would abolish the ATF and I would do a bunch of other things we've talked about. But this has always been the greatest danger for me when the Supreme Court didn't immediately rule the Clinton semi-auto rifle ban, magazine ban, as illegal, unconstitutional, and no authority, no reason whatsoever to be able to do that. And I knew that was going to come back to haunt us, because the government always said, well, look, we passed the assault weapons ban. Why can't we... Why can't we regulate these guns now? And even though it's sunset in 10 years, which is a great thing, it never should have been allowed to become law. Even, you know, it should have gone right to the court. Now, did the groups try and do that, and the court wimped out like they usually do, or what happened? And I got Pianca in the line. He wants to ask you a question.
Yeah, I actually don't remember, at least in the early part.
You're so
because
young.
Because I was
no,
not. I was just not facing it and looking at it as much. I was still on active duty in the military, and I think I was overseas for the first part of that. But I can tell you towards the end, the concern was that if they started a court case to declare it unconstitutional, it wouldn't make it to the Supreme Court before the law sunsetted and it was mooted out. And there was a big concern that you would have an appellate court that would rule that it was constitutional, and then it would moot out before the Supreme Court could overrule that, and that would be an appellate decision that stood. So that was one of the reasons why, towards the end, there was no push for litigation.
Yeah. There's always been a fear of using the Second Amendment.
Part of it was everyone was scared to death of Kennedy, because at that point in time, the Second Amendment meant whatever Justice Kennedy said it meant, because he was the swing vote.
Yeah, Yeah. No, I understand that. And I say there's always been a reluctance of the gun groups to actually use the Second Amendment. Like the ACL has no reluctance to using the First Amendment. And so it's, you know, it's like when people say we have to have, we want the Supreme Court to, you know, admit that the Second Amendment is an individual right. Well, you don't need the Supreme Court to do that. It's already an individual right. And relying on the Supreme Court to which is subordinate to the Constitution, to have them, you know, rule that what something that we already know never made any sense either. Okay, Bianca, so because I know you only have a few minutes left. Bianca, you're on with Jim Dykes. This is the Gun Report. Go for it.
Well, I was going to tell Jim, I never would think the day would come when Missouri would be more gun friendly than Louisiana.
Ah.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But let me ask you a question. You know, Louisiana is about 32% black. You think that that has something to do with the Democrats, that they didn't want blacks to have the ability to carry guns around in their pocket?
Governor's
See,
White,
I like
right?
to pull out all the
Just
stops.
Go for it. Now, the governor's white in Louisiana?
John, he's a Democratic governor in a Republican, a red state.
Okay.
Bill Edwards.
Okay. Jim, finish
yeah,
the question.
And- Yeah, so, you know, the I would say my gut feeling is that that is probably true, but, you know, I don't know what any individual legislator or group of legislators thinks. So, yeah.
Well, you
I
had legislators
definitely...
that was you had legislators that was willing and dealing for a position. One was willing for a gaming commission commissioner. And no telling what the others were, but, you know, I was just thinking, we got to start calling these things. You know, gut feeling, it's all right to, well, I don't know what your position is totally. But, heck, we got to start, I think that people need to start proclaiming their gut feelings. I do.
Yeah.
No, I think there's definitely that argument to be made that it at least appears – that is the case, and then let them have to defend themselves on why they made those votes if it wasn't because of that.
Yeah. Just we don't talk about this much, but we probably should. In fact, you should give a plug every week, Jim, for Florida Carry. Jim is a director of Florida Carry, dedicated to open carry in Florida. And so that position, I'm sure, means that you can't say certain things, in which case, just like Derek, who's a financial advisor, he can't say certain things. We went over that earlier. But the things that you can say, you know, be as bold as you can and feel free. Bianca is going to – I love having Bianca on the show because he does expand the boundaries of what we talk about in a great way. So that's kind of cool. Jim?
Yeah, and I'm okay with giving my own feelings rather than those of Florida Carry. And if I think it's a place where someone might be confused, whether it's my personal feeling or the position of Florida Carry, I'll try to explain that it's my personal feeling. For the most part, what I talk about here is my own personal position, unless I say that it's the position of Florida Carry.
Okay, that's good to know. Let's get back to the racist governor of Louisiana. Do you think that's what's going on, Bianchi?
Well, yeah, yes, I do. I think so. Okay. He was taking some information for some police chiefs, and of course, all the black legislature in Louisiana, of course, they was against it, the Constitution of carry too. So, and you know, funny thing, you look at Missouri. Missouri had less of a.
Go ahead. Yeah,
Missouri had a lesser percentage of blacks in the state of Missouri, but they can carry without a permit. Now, to open carry, you got to have a, you know, CCW. In Mississippi, in Louisiana, I think you can open carry. I got a CCW in Louisiana, but I think you can open carry. You have to have a CCW license. But the concealed carry, you got to have a CCW license. I think you can open carry openly, but I would have to check.
It's interesting. States have different things. Now, Missouri is constitutional carry now? In other words,
Missouri's been constitutional carry for about a couple of years.
Wait a minute. There are black people in Missouri carrying guns openly? What do you think?
You're right. No, you're not teasing me. That's a good point, because they do in downtown St. Louis. And not only do they have guns, but you have some people with crossbows.
Oh, that's interesting. That raises a whole thing we've never talked about, Jim, is that we think of arms as guns, but there are knives, you know, there are little crossbows and things like that. There are all kinds of nunchucks. You know, there's all kinds of weapons that people can have that are still considered arms because, you know, you hold them in your arms and they can be used to defend you. Would open carry include some of those other weapons? It's kind of interesting. Jim?
Yes, so that argument has actually been put forth in an awful lot of court cases, and for the most part, you're right. All of those things you named are arms, and the courts have traditionally ruled that those are arms and they are covered under the Second Amendment.
Yeah. I don't like this being decided in the courts. I mean, it's so much better to have good legislation. I mean, that's my preference, but when there's bad legislation, unfortunately, don't have any recourse but the courts. We need to get a couple folks from Black Gun Groups on the show. I'm thinking Colin Noir. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. And who's the one that does Black Guns Matter? Is that Colin or is that there's another gentleman?
Well, there's
Maj.
There's
Maj Touré.
That's Maj Touré, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another gun group, North American, you know, the African American Gun Club, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, they are spread throughout the country.
Yeah. You know, one of the interesting developments of that Biden speech is going to be that more and more people are now going to buy guns. And there's, Jim, you can probably talk about this. I don't know what the latest statistics are, but there are more black gun owners, there are more women gun owners, there are more, you know, every category you can think of, there are more gun owners. So this is not a, you know, what might have been 50 years ago, I guess, you know, the white Christian male, you know, place of, you know, buying firearms, which is a bunch of nonsense anyway, but buying guns now.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to continue to see that, and I think you'll probably see those trends continuing where women and persons of color are going to continue to increase their percentage of gun owners in America because, as you said, they are tending to buy right now at higher percentages than, say, white males. And I actually am going to have to run, Greg, but
I
just wanted to get that in real quick.
Yeah. No, thank you. Websites for Florida Carry, anything you want to do? We got to get you to do some kind of ways people can get in touch with you. Yeah.
Sure. If they want. Website for Florida Carry is floridacarry.org. And if anyone wants to get in touch with me, they can email me at jim@floridacarry.org.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Let's do that every week just so people know. Have a great week, and we'll continue to hash out the issues next week. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Bye now. Yeah, we got to talking about Switzerland and all kinds of different things. So, you know, this is why, you know, I love talking to Jim. I love talking to Derek. I love talking to all the folks that are here simply because we do. We have the freedom to just go where the topics take us. So, Pianki, hang on a little bit. I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece this week, our founding moments. This is Anti-Federalist 2. In fact, I'll just mute you for a little bit if you want to take a break for a second. We'll be back in this is a long one. This is 8 minutes. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll talk to you in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. It's funny how all the writing from our founding, all the authors, think that multiple paragraphs of preamble is somehow preferable to getting to the main points. Anti-Federalist number 2, like every other paper I've read so far, has several paragraphs of introduction, but the main points, the really important stuff, is at the bottom. If you don't have time, if you don't have the time of a quill pen and horse society with no internet, I advise starting these Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers about halfway through. Anti-Federalist number 2 was written by William Grayson, June 11, 1788. He, like all the Anti-Federalists, questioned the need for a constitution at all, when all the convention was really asked to do was update the Articles of Confederation. Why an arrogant group of elitists gathered in Philadelphia at this constitutional convention to totally change everything from a confederation of independent states, more like independent nations, to a union of United States, especially since, except for a few exceptions, the people, as in we the people,
the folks government is supposed to serve were for the most part happy with their independent states. Let's get into his bombshells in the last few paragraphs of his anti-federalist paper. Grayson says this: there are certain modes of governing the people which will succeed. There are others which will not. The idea of consolidation is abhorrent to the people of this country. How were the sentiments of the people before the meeting of the Convention of Philadelphia? They had only one object in view. Their ideas reached no farther than to give the general government the 5 per centum impost and the regulation of trade. When it was agitated in Congress in a committee of the whole, this was all that was asked, or was deemed necessary. Since that period, their views have extended much farther. Horrors have been greatly magnified since the rising of the convention. William Grayson has a theme in his paper about how the people want to be governed, and not how the elites think the people want to be governed. He highlights that in the people sent their representatives to the convention in Philadelphia to regulate trade among the states and run the government by taxing imports at 5% through an impost, so that the importing companies paid for the U.S. government and the people didn't. My source on impost is the Duke University Library Answer Person. The real brilliance of William Grayson, something I believe is lost to history for those who do not read the Anti-Federalist Papers, is his analysis of the big picture of government. He has already stated that the people wanted basically two issues solved, not an entire form of government created. He also has an alternative to the Constitution with which he concludes his analysis. The two choices of the convention in Philadelphia were to amend the Articles of Confederation so that they created a system that worked, which is what the Anti-Federalists wanted, or to ratify the Constitution, which did come out of that convention, which is what the Federalists wanted. In opposition to that outcome, Grayson says next, "But what would I do on the present occasion to remedy the existing defects of the present Confederation? There are two opinions prevailing in the world. The one, that mankind can only be governed by force. The other, that they are capable of freedom and a good government. Under a supposition that mankind can govern themselves, I would recommend that the present Confederation should be amended. Give Congress the regulation of commerce, infuse new strength and spirit into the state governments, for when the component parts are strong, it will give energy to the government, although it be otherwise weak." This is almost Orwellian, but in a good sense, what William Grayson is saying, and I agree, that in government, weakness is strength. It sounds like a contradiction, but it's really a guarantee, because neither the people nor the individual can be ruled by force by a government that is too weak. So our guarantee in the strength of the people and the people to exercise their individual rights is in the gradual weakening of government power and replacing that with the gradual increase in the power of the people. Because ultimately, what Grayson is saying is that only through a purposefully and responsibly weak government will the people be capable of exercising freedom and to receive a good government. I may have to think, or rethink actually, our entire strategy here at Action Radio based on this. I have plans to disarm the bureaucracies and abolish the FBI, but I may have to reevaluate the idea of a responsibly weak government so that the people are not only capable of freedom, but actively participating in it, because the only good government is a responsibly weak one, not one that can rule by force. Guess what we have today? William Grayson ends with his practical solutions now that he has outlined his overall principles. He says, "Apportion the public debts in such a manner as to throw the unpopular ones on the back lands. Call only for requisitions for the foreign interest and aid them by loans. Keep on so till the American character be marked with some certain features. We are yet too young to know what we are fit for. The continual migration of people from Europe and the sentiment of new countries on our western frontiers are strong arguments against making new experiments now in government. When these things are removed, we can, with greater prospect of success, devise changes. We ought to consider, as Montesquieu says, whether the construction of the government be suitable to the genius and disposition of the people, as well as a variety of other circumstances. In other words, pay the debts with the sale of land so the debts don't become overwhelming in time. Avoid any foreign aid that isn't a loan. Wait until the unique American character emerges from the colonies before imposing an entirely new form of government through a constitution. Hold off on creating a new government system until immigration from Europe and Asia has stabilized and enough people are here. And only after all this, and our true American character has emerged, should we create a government system equal to the people and their freedom, and not force the people to live under the imposed government that goes way beyond what the people ever intended. Oh, if we only could have seen how that would have worked out. A source for this report is federalistpapers.org. The anti-federalist paper source is selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right, let's bring Piak back into the conversation. I'm kind of proud of this one, and I really learned a lot from reading Anti-Federalist number 2. And I'm going to study the Articles of Confederation that may be my next report and find out exactly what were the alternatives, because we think of the Constitution as the wonderful document that sets us apart from everybody else. And the more I read the Anti-Federalists, the more I realized that it was a very viable option to reform the Articles of Confederation so that we didn't get in the mess that we have now. What do you think?
Well, you have to read the Confederate and the Anti in order to try to understand what was behind the moves that the founding fathers of the Constitution, what was in their mind, especially.
Well, I'm doing both. I'm doing the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. In fact, I'm going one-to-one because I think the Anti-Federalist, like number 2, was written to counter Federalist number 2. And so by doing this point counterpoint, I'm able to make a whole collection. And I'm going to make a YouTube channel. So I'm going to put these on YouTube so people can share them, look at them. Well, not look, but listen to them and sort of have a whole library of resources, of analysis. And these are I'm not doing this with scholarly, otherwise I quote them. Like, I'm not reading a bunch of scholarly sources. I'm just reading the Federalist Papers as if a person in the 1700s would have read them and just giving my impressions of what they're talking about. Of course, it's based on current context because, I have all this – I have a couple hundred years of history to reflect on what they're saying, but it's still original thoughts, original, I'm just reading it going, this is what I think. And that one, way longer than I expected, but I'm kind of proud of it just because of the revelations. And who's this guy, William Grayson? He's brilliant. The things he's looking at and looking at our future society of why didn't we just sell the land? Why isn't foreign aid alone? And why did we form a new government before we had all the immigration taken care of, where we had enough people? And these are great questions that I don't think anybody's ever really asked except these guys way back then.
Well, I was reading something on the state of Georgia this morning and see where it became a state. I think it ratified, the fourth to ratify was in 1888, I believe, and maybe 1887, right along the time that the Constitution was ratified.
1700,
but
you mean,
before
1788?
That,
yeah.
Yeah. But before that, that was Indian territory. Now, I ain't going to say that it was taken because there were deals that was done, but those are things that's not talked about readily.
Yeah. Did you ever hear the reports with Chief Dan Skyhorse when we talked about the Treaty of New York and some of the treaties to cede over land to the federal government in exchange for, protected lands for the various Indian tribes, like the Creek tribe down here?
Absolutely.
So I can put the Treaty of New York on my list of documents to cover well, because that would be fascinating. And the Confederate Constitution, I want to cover that too. I've read it. And there's some pretty good things in there for the regular Constitution, once you discount the slavery contentions that are in there. But there are some interesting parts of it that no one reads because, the Confederate Constitution authorizes slavery. So people condemn the entire document.
And you can't do that. Cause
and, you know, here's another thing, too, that I see today. Uh-huh. You got some talking voices, organizations, movements in that that try to claim and label Indians, or should I say tribal members, who have black skin. They were not American. They remain identified with their nation. That's why the treaties was made. You make treaties with nations. You don't make treaties with, you know, civil rights. Treaty and civil rights do different things.
States don't make treaties either, yeah.
Right. So you could, when you look at this, it's confusing. And I don't know if it's deliberate. I think it is deliberate, just out of plain ignorance. But if people knew exactly who you're talking about, then I think things would be, a lot of the arguments that's going on would just have to go away because they don't have no substance.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by people knew who they were talking about, but yeah, a lot of these founding documents, you know, you try and put them in context. I have trouble with English sometimes just because they use words in ways that are not familiar. And so I have to kind of read them over again and go, oh, that's why I like to translate a lot of them into sort of like modern language so they make more sense. And you go, oh, that's what he's talking about. I mean, I can see it. You know, I can see where they're going with a lot of this stuff. But it is fascinating that there was a much bigger debate raging back then than we think about, because people go, oh, Constitution, Declaration of Independence, yeah, they're perfect, yeah, nothing, you know, we need them back again. So, well, there's some interesting arguments. I mean, because nothing's perfect. There is no perfect system. You get the best you can, and then, you know, through practice and, you know, jury trials and future legislation and things like that, you continually improve. And, of course, the times change, too, so nothing stays static.
Well, you know, the only reason why the Constitution wasn't perfect because they didn't have the ability to look into the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that makes sense. But what's interesting is that technology changes, but people don't. You know, greed is still there. Power obsession is still there. And I don't care whether you're, you know, commanding a horse-drawn artillery cannon brigade or whether you've got, you know, nuclear weapons. Or Joe Biden said, you know, everybody's an F-15. You know, you need to take an F-15 to take on the government. Well, nobody wants to do that.
Well, that's the same thing with all biological. That's the same thing with all biological makeup. The COVID virus, don't it mutate? It mutates because it tries to survive.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting you should say that. I spent the first half hour on this amazing lawsuit by America's frontline doctors trying, is a preliminary injunction to stop the COVID vaccines, because they're too dangerous, and they used an illegal emergency use authorization and an illegal emergency declaration, because emergency really never was, and it's long since departed, to force these vaccines on people and everything that goes along with it. I can do more of that if you want. I think we finished up with asymptomatic spread.
I think
when
you
start
talking about it,
we've got about 8 minutes.
I think when you start talking about it, it makes people think. You know, even the process of impregnating a female, when a man ejaculates in his sperm, there's billions of spermatozoids, and only one makes it, because the woman's immune system look at those as being foreign invaders and it attacks them and kills them. The old cliche about an older elderly man can't make babies, well, you're right. Why? Because they have less spermatozoids in their sperm, and they get all killed off. So if you had an army of 500,000 compared to when you was young, you had an army of 10 million, well, which would be more likely to make it by the defense? So people don't think. They don't know.
Well, that's not what I expected to talk about this morning, but that's okay. Something else I heard, too, that the reason that men produce so many sperm is to ensure genetic succession from the other men who are producing so many sperm. So the guy that mates with the woman who produces the most sperm has the greatest chance of having his genetic DNA carried on into the next generation.
Well, but the male doesn't. It's only the female. The male DNA don't enter the egg, by the way. So we are. That's what the old term, mother's baby, father's maybe, come along from.
Oh.
Anyway, get back to the COVID.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously, it's not an area. We better switch right now. All right. So back to this. How do we do this? So this is where there's a document here, and it's let me get the show title because that's what has it. It's a preliminary injunction. Plaintiff's motion for a preliminary injunction to stop the COVID vaccine. So let me get to the section here, section 2 they're talking about here, saying, this is still with the introduction, there is in fact no serious or life-threatening disease or condition. So these are all the reasons that they're going over for stopping the COVID vaccine. Basically, it was created, the emergency use was done illegally, and the emergency declared for something that wasn't an emergency. That's the basic thrust of this. And then what they want to do is stop the COVID vaccine, stop the emergency use authorization, stop giving it until it's done legally. All right. So there is, in fact, no serious or life-threatening disease or condition. They say once an emergency has been declared, and while it remains in force, the Health and Human Services Secretary can issue and maintain emergency use authorizations only if certain criteria are met. One of those criteria is that there is, in fact, not simply perceived, projected, or declared, a serious or life-threatening disease or condition. For the reasons set forth above in prior sections, SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19 do not constitute a serious or life-threatening disease or condition within the meaning of the statute. It also bears noting that the legal purpose of an emergency declaration is to bypass checks and balances typically required under law due to a crisis, and that the use of such a declaration for such an arbitrary purpose could undermine the balance of power between the various branches of government. Let me put this simply. What they're saying is, when they say it's not a life-threatening situation, because the survival rate for those under 70 is 99.97%. Okay? That means 0.03% of the population is vulnerable. Now, for them, it's a serious condition. But for the 99.97% of the rest of the population, it's just a, you know, it's like a flu bug. And so that's what they're getting at. Here's the next one too. The vaccines do not diagnose, treat, or prevent SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. This is going to be a shock to a lot of people too. The Health and Human Services Secretary can issue and maintain the vaccine emergency use authorizations, and this is in law, folks, only if they are effective in diagnosing, treating, or preventing a disease or condition. That's in the law. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, data shows that the vaccines are not effective in treating or preventing SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. It's basically the same thing. Deaths from COVID-19 in those who have received the recommended dosages of the vaccines increased from 160 as of April 30th, 2021, to 535 as of June 1st, 2021. Further, a total of 10,262 SARS-CoV-2 breakthrough infections of those who have already received the full recommended dosage of the vaccines were reported to the CDC from 46 states and territories between January 1st, 2021 and April 30th, 2021. So this is what they're saying. And they said earlier that, and talking about this whole thing, that this is, you know, these vaccines don't do what they're supposed to do. It says, here's the next part. In studying the effectiveness, I have about 3 minutes left. In studying the effectiveness of a medical intervention in randomized controlled trials, often called the gold standard of study design, the most useful way to present results is in terms of absolute risk reduction. Let me skip that part because that's a little confusing to understand. But what they say here, there are several factors that reduced any purported benefit of the COVID-19 vaccines. First, it is important to note that the vaccines were only shown to reduce symptoms, not block transmission. Let me say that again. The COVID vaccines were only shown to reduce symptoms, not block transmission. So every time you hear, you know, Biden or anybody else say, well, you got to take the vaccine, man, or it'll prevent you ever getting COVID. That's not what this thing does. And this comes right from the science, right from the CDC, right from the definitions of this. It says it is important to note the vaccines were only shown to reduce symptoms, not block transmission. So for over a year now, back to the court document, these defendants at state-level public health authorities have told the American public that SARS-CoV-2 can be spread by people who have none of the symptoms of COVID-19. We covered that earlier. Therefore, Americans must mask themselves and submit to innumerable lockdowns and restrictions, even though they are not manifestly sick. If that is the case, and these officials were not lying to the public, and asymptomatic spread is real, then what is the benefit of a vaccine that merely reduces symptoms? There isn't any. And that's where we stand. We've got about a minute left. So you might want to get this report. In fact, I'm going to scroll to the top for anybody that missed it the first time. The United States District Court for the Northern District of Alabama, the plaintiffs are America's frontline doctors. That's Dr. Simone Gold, Dr. Stella Emanuel, a bunch of other folks, against Xavier Becerra, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services in the Biden insurrection. So you can find it. It was filed July 19th, 2021 at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1:01 in the afternoon, U.S. District Court of Northern District Court of Alabama, U.S. District Court, Northern District of Alabama. There we go. Got a minute left. Bianchi, new information, or you knew that already because you listened to the show?
Well, I leave that type of information up to you. You do a very splendid job. You've been working on your heart. Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to Margaret? Remember her way back when?
Well, I did ban her from the show, but I can't really do that. But I have her number, and that's not her real name, by the way.
All her talking points is you shot all them talking points down as time went by, right?
Well, the thing is, everything I said was correct. The Biden insurrection is a false election. You know, he's not the president. That was correct. Okay. COVID-19, I've always said.
It turned out to be a fraud.
Yeah. And COVID-19, there was never a pandemic because we had the cure. We talked about the cure back on March 2nd. I've got the episode. You know, I put it on Facebook routinely that Dr. Dieter Raoult in France, in Marseille, and Dr. Zelenko here in the United States, he was in New York at the time, came up with the cure for COVID, hydroxychloroquine.
Well, did they create the vaccine before the virus?
Of course they did.
You know why?
Go ahead. Tell me.
Because if the virus was to get away, they always had something that they could control it with. That was a clever thing with them.
I told you that too. Now we're off the air, so I got to be really quick here. But yes, I have always believed that the reason they used SARS-CoV-2, a development of SARS-CoV-1, was because Dr. Fascist, one Anthony Fauci, knew back in 2005 that hydroxychloroquine killed SARS-CoV-1. So even if they completely screwed up with SARS-CoV-2 with their little marketing plan, they had the cure for themselves, but they wouldn't let anybody else have it. That to me
Thank you very much.
That makes Dr. Fascist a genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. With that, I'll leave you. Be back Monday. This is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, Action Radio. Talk to you 7 o'clock Monday.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.